Control the coinage and the courts. Let the rabble have the rest. Thus the Padishah Emperor advises you. And he tells you, if you want profits, you must rule. There is truth in these words. But I ask myself, who are the rabble, and who are the ruled? Muad'Dib's Secret Message to the Lansrad from Arrakis Awakening by the Princess Irulan. A thought came unbidden to Jessica's mind. Paul will be undergoing his Sandrider test at any moment now. They try to conceal this fact from me, but it's obvious. And Chaney has gone on some mysterious errand. Jessica sat in her resting chamber, catching a moment of quiet between the night's classes. It was a pleasant chamber, but not as large as the one she had enjoyed in C.H. Tabor before their flight from the pogrom. Still, this place had thick rugs on the floor, soft cushions, a low coffee table near at hand, multicolored hangings on the walls, and soft yellow glow globes overhead. The room was permeated with the distinctive, acrid, furry odor of a Fremen C.H. that she had come to associate with a sense of security. Yet she knew she would never overcome a feeling of being in an alien place. It was the harshness that the rugs and hangings attempted to conceal. A faint tinkling, drumming, slapping penetrated to the resting chamber. Jessica knew it for a birth celebration, probably Soubier's. Her time was near, and Jessica knew she'd see the baby soon enough. A blue-eyed cherub brought to the Reverend Mother for blessing. She knew also that her daughter, Aaliyah, would be at the celebration and would report on it. It was not yet time for the nightly prayer of parting. They wouldn't have started a birth celebration near the time of ceremony that mourned the slave raids of Poritran, Bela Taguz, Rossak, and Harmonthep. Jessica sighed. She knew she was trying to keep her thoughts off her son and the dangers he faced. The pit traps with their poisoned barbs, the Harkonnen raids, although these were growing fewer as the Fremen took their toll of aircraft and raiders with the new weapons Paul had given them, and the natural dangers of the desert, makers and thirsts and dust chasms. She thought of calling for coffee, and with the thought came that ever-present awareness of paradox in the Fremen way of life. How well they lived in these CH caverns compared to the Graben peons, yet how much more they endured in the open harge of the desert than anything the Harkonnen bondsmen endured. A dark hand inserted itself through the hangings beside her, deposited a cup upon the table, and withdrew. From the cup arose the aroma of spiced coffee. An offering from the birth celebration, Jessica thought. She took the coffee and sipped it, smiling at herself. In what other society of our universe, she asked herself, could a person of my station accept an anonymous drink and quaff that drink without fear? I could alter any poison now before it did me harm, of course, but the donor doesn't realize this. She drained the cup, feeling the energy and lift of its contents, hot and delicious. And she wondered what other society would have such a natural regard for her privacy and comfort that the giver would intrude only enough to deposit the gift and not inflict her with the donor. Respect and love had sent the gift, with only a slight tinge of fear. Another element of the incident forced itself into her awareness. She had thought of coffee, and it had appeared. There was nothing of telepathy here, she knew. It was the Tao, the oneness of the CH community, a compensation from the subtle poison of the spice diet they shared. The great mass of the people could never hope to attain the enlightenment the spice seed brought to her. They had not been trained and prepared for it. Their minds rejected what they could not understand or encompass. Still, they felt and reacted sometimes like a single organism. And the thought of coincidence never entered their minds. Has Paul passed his test on the sand? Jessica asked herself. He's capable, but accident can strike down even the most capable. The waiting. It's the dreariness, she thought. You can wait just so long. Then the dreariness of the waiting overcomes you. There was all manner of waiting in their lives. More than 2 years we've been here, she thought, and twice that number at least to go before we can even hope to think of trying to wrest Arrakis from the Harkonnen governor, the Mudir Naya, the Beast Rabban. Reverend Mother. The voice from outside the hangings at her door was that of Hera, the other woman in Paul's menage. Yes, Hera. The hangings parted and Hera seemed to glide through them. She wore CH sandals, a red-yellow wraparound that exposed her arms almost to the shoulders. Her black hair was parted in the middle and swept back like the wings of an insect, flat and oily against her head. The jutting, predatory features were drawn into an intense frown. Behind Hera came Aaliyah, a girl child of about 2 years. Seeing her daughter, Jessica was caught, as she frequently was, by Aaliyah's resemblance to Paul at that age. The same wide-eyed solemnity to her questing look, the dark hair and firmness of mouth. But there were subtle differences, too, and it was in these that most adults found Aaliyah disquieting. The child, little more than a toddler, carried herself with a calmness and awareness beyond her years. Adults were shocked to find her laughing at a subtle play of words between the sexes, or they'd catch themselves listening to her half-lisping voice, still blurred as it was by an unformed, soft palate, and discover in her words sly remarks that could only be based on experiences no 2-year-old had ever encountered. Hera sank to a cushion with an exasperated sigh, frowned at the child. Aaliyah. Jessica motioned to her daughter. The child crossed to a cushion beside her mother, sank to it, and clasped her mother's hand. The contact of flesh restored that mutual awareness they had shared since before Aaliyah's birth. It wasn't a matter of shared thoughts, although there were bursts of that if they touched while Jessica was changing the spice poison for a ceremony. It was something larger, an immediate awareness of another living spark, a sharp and poignant thing, a nerve simpatico that made them emotionally one. In the formal manner that befitted a member of her son's household, Jessica said, "Subak ul kuhar, Hera. This night finds you well." With the same traditional formality, she said, "Subak unnar, I am well." The words were almost toneless. Again, she sighed. Jessica sensed amusement from Aaliyah. "My brother's Ganima is annoyed with me," Aaliyah said in her half lisp. Jessica marked the term Aaliyah used to refer to Hera. Ganima. In the subtleties of the Fremen tongue, the word meant something acquired in battle, and with the added overtone that the something no longer was used for its original purpose. An ornament, a spearhead used as a curtain weight. Hera scowled at the child. "Don't try to insult me, child. I know my place." "What have you done this time, Aaliyah?" Jessica asked. Hera answered, "Not only has she refused to play with the other children today, but she intruded where..." "I hid behind the hangings and watched Subie's child being born," Aaliyah said. "It's a boy." He cried and cried. "What a set of lungs! When he'd cried long enough, she came out and touched him, Hera said. And he stopped crying. Everyone knows a Fremen baby must get his crying done at birth if he's in CH, because he can never cry again lest he betray us on Hajar. He'd cried enough, Aaliyah said. I just wanted to feel his spark, his life. That's all. And when he felt me, he didn't want to cry anymore. It's just made more talk among the people, Hera said. Soubirous boy is healthy, Jessica asked. She saw that something was troubling Hera deeply and wondered at it. Healthy as any mother could ask, Hera said. They know Aaliyah didn't hurt him. They didn't so much mind her touching him. He settled down right away and was happy. It was... Hera shrugged. It's the strangeness of my daughter, is that it? Jessica asked. It's the way she speaks of things beyond her years and of things no child her age could know. Things of the past. How could she know what a child looked like on Bella Taguz? Hera demanded. But he does, Aaliyah said. Soubirous boy looks just like the son of Mitha, born before the parting. Aaliyah, Jessica warned. I warned you. But mother, I saw it, and it was true, and... Jessica shook her head, seeing the signs of disturbance in Hera's face. What have I borne? Jessica asked herself. A daughter who knew at birth everything that I knew. And more. Everything revealed to her out of the corridors of the past by the reverend mothers within me. It's not just the things she says, Hera said. It's the exercises, too. The way she sits and stares at a rock, moving only one muscle beside her nose, or a muscle on the back of a finger, or... Those are the Bene Gesserit training, Jessica said. You know that, Hera. Would you deny my daughter her inheritance? Reverend Mother, you know these things don't matter to me, Hera said. It's the people and the way they mutter. I feel danger in it. They say your daughter's a demon, that other children refuse to play with her, that she has so little in common with the other children, Jessica said. She's no demon. It's just that, of course she's not. Jessica found herself surprised at the vehemence in Hera's tone, glanced down at Aaliyah. The child appeared lost in thought, radiating a sense of waiting. Jessica returned her attention to Hera. I respect the fact that you're a member of my son's household, Jessica said. Aaliyah stirred against her hand. You may speak openly with me of whatever's troubling you. I will not be a member of your son's household much longer, Hera said. I've waited this long for the sake of my sons, the special training they receive as the children of Usul. It's little enough I could give them, since it's known I don't share your son's bed. Again, Aaliyah stirred beside her, half sleeping, warm. You'd have made a good companion for my son, though, Jessica said. And she added to herself, because such thoughts were ever with her, companion, not a wife. Jessica's thoughts went then straight to the center, to the pang that came from the common talk in the CH that her son's companionship with Cheney had become a permanent thing, the marriage. I love Cheney, Jessica thought, but she reminded herself that love might have to step aside for royal necessity. Royal marriages had other reasons than love. You think I don't know what you plan for your son? Hera asked. What do you mean? Jessica demanded. You plan to unite the tribes under him, Hera said. Is that bad? I see danger for him, and Aaliyah is part of that danger. Aaliyah nestled closer to her mother, eyes opened now and studying Hera. "I've watched you two together," Hera said, "the way you touch. And Aaliyah is like my own flesh because she's sister to one who is like my brother. I've watched over her and guarded her from the time she was a mere baby, from the time of the Razia when we fled here. I've seen many things about her." Jessica nodded, feeling disquiet begin to grow in Aaliyah beside her. "You know what I mean," Hera said. "The way she knew from the first what we were saying to her. When has there been another baby who knew the water discipline so young? What other baby's first words to her nurse were, 'I love you, Hera'?" Hera stared at Aaliyah. "Why do you think I accept her insults? I know there's no malice in them." Aaliyah looked up at her mother. "Yes, I have reasoning powers, Reverend Mother," Hera said. "I could have been of the Sayyidina. I have seen what I have seen." "Hera," Jessica shrugged, "I don't know what to say." And she felt surprise at herself, because this literally was true. Aaliyah straightened, squared her shoulders. Jessica felt the sense of waiting ended, an emotion compounded of decision and sadness. "We made a mistake," Aaliyah said. "Now we need Hera." "It was the ceremony of the seed," Hera said. "When you changed the water of life, Reverend Mother, when Aaliyah was yet unborn within you." "Need Hera?" Jessica asked herself. "Who else can talk among the people and make them begin to understand me?" Aaliyah asked. "What would you have her do?" Jessica asked. "She already knows what to do," Aaliyah said. "I will tell them the truth," Hera said. Her face seemed suddenly old and sad, with its olive skin drawn into frown wrinkles, a witchery in the sharp features. "I will tell them that Aaliyah only pretends to be a little girl, that she has never been a little girl." Aaliyah shook her head. Tears ran down her cheeks, and Jessica felt the wave of sadness from her daughter as though the emotion were her own. "I know I'm a freak," Aaliyah whispered. The adult summation coming from the child mouth was like a bitter confirmation. "You're not a freak," Hera snapped. "Who dared say you're a freak?" Again, Jessica marveled at the fierce note of protectiveness in Hera's voice. Jessica saw then that Aaliyah had judged correctly. They did need Hera. The tribe would understand Hera, both her words and her emotions, for it was obvious she loved Aaliyah as though this were her own child. "Who said it?" Hera repeated. "Nobody." Aaliyah used a corner of Jessica's abba to wipe the tears from her face. She smoothed the robe where she had dampened and crumpled it. "Then don't you say it," Hera ordered. "Yes, Hera." "Now," Hera said, "you may tell me what it was like so that I may tell the others. Tell me what it is that happened to you." Aaliyah swallowed, looked up at her mother. Jessica nodded. "One day, I woke up," Aaliyah said. "It was like waking from sleep, except that I could not remember going to sleep. I was in a warm, dark place, and I was frightened." Listening to the half-lisping voice of her daughter, Jessica remembered that day in the big cavern. "When I was frightened," Aaliyah said, "I tried to escape, but there was no way to escape. Then I saw a spark, but it wasn't exactly like seeing it. The spark was just there with me, and I felt the spark's emotions soothing me. comforting me, telling me that way that everything would be all right. That was my mother. Hera rubbed at her eyes, smiled reassuringly at Aaliyah. Yet there was a look of wildness in the eyes of the Fremen woman, an intensity as though they, too, were trying to hear Aaliyah's words. And Jessica thought, what do we really know of how such a one thinks? Out of her unique experiences and training and ancestry. Just when I felt safe and reassured, Aaliyah said, there was another spark with us. And everything was happening at once. The other spark was the old Reverend Mother. She was trading lives with my mother. Everything. And I was there with them, seeing it all. Everything. And it was over. And I was them, and all the others, and myself. Only it took me a long time to find myself again. There were so many others. It was a cruel thing, Jessica said. No being should wake into consciousness thus. The wonder of it is you could accept all that happened to you. I couldn't do anything else, Aaliyah said. I didn't know how to reject or hide my consciousness or shut it off. Everything just happened. Everything. We didn't know, Hera murmured. When we gave your mother the water to change, we didn't know you existed within her. Don't be sad about it, Hera, Aaliyah said. I shouldn't feel sorry for myself. After all, there's cause for happiness here. I'm a reverend mother. The tribe has two She broke off, tipping her head to listen. Hera rocked back on her heels against the sitting cushion, stared at Aaliyah, bringing her attention then up to Jessica's face. Didn't you suspect? Jessica asked. Shh, Aaliyah said. A distant, rhythmic chanting came to them through the hangings that separated them from the CH corridors. It grew louder, carrying distinct sounds now. Ya, ya, yum! Ya, ya, yum! Mu zain wala! Ya, ya, yum! Mu zain wala! The chanters passed the outer entrance, and their voices boomed through to the inner apartments. Slowly, the sound receded. When the sound had dimmed sufficiently, Jessica began the ritual, the sadness in her voice. It was Ramadan and April on Bella Taguz. My family sat in their pool courtyard, Hera said, in air bathed by the moisture that arose from the spray of a fountain. There was a tree of portugals, round and deep in color, near at hand. There was a basket with mishmish, and baklava, and mugs of liban, all manner of good things to eat. In our gardens and in our flocks there was peace, peace in all the land. Life was full with happiness until the raiders came, Aaliyah said. Blood ran cold at the scream of friends, Jessica said, and she felt the memories rushing through her out of all those other pasts she shared. La, 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 the women cried, said Hera. The raiders came through the mushtamal, rushing at us with their knives dripping red from the lives of our men, Jessica said. Silence came over the three of them, as it was in all the apartments of the CH, the silence while they remembered and kept their grief thus fresh. Presently Hera uttered the ritual ending to the ceremony, giving the words a harshness that Jessica had never before heard in them. We will never forgive, and we will never forget, Hera said. In the thoughtful quiet that followed her words, they heard a muttering of people, the swish of many robes. Jessica sensed someone standing beyond the hangings that shielded her chamber. Reverend Mother. A woman's voice, and Jessica recognized it. The voice of Tharthar, one of Stilgar's wives. "What is it, Tharthar?"
"There is trouble, Reverend Mother."
Jessica felt a constriction at her heart, an abrupt fear for Paul. "Paul," she gasped. Tharthar spread the hangings, stepped into the chamber. Jessica glimpsed a press of people in the outer room before the hangings fell. She looked up at Tharthar, a small, dark woman in a red-figured robe of black, the total blue of her eyes trained fixedly on Jessica, the nostrils of her tiny nose dilated to reveal the plug scars.
"What is it?" Jessica demanded.
"There is word from the sand," Tharthar said. "Usul meets the Maker for his test. It is today. The young men say he cannot fail. He will be a sand rider by nightfall. The young men are banding for Arazia. They will raid in the north and meet Usul there. They say they will raise the cry then. They say they will force him to call out Stilgar and assume command of the tribes.
Gathering water, planting the dunes, changing their world slowly but surely. These are no longer enough," Jessica thought. "The little raids, the certain raids. These are no longer enough now that Paul and I have trained them. They feel their power. They want to fight."
Tharthar shifted from one foot to the other, cleared her throat.
"We know the need for cautious waiting," Jessica thought, "but there's the core of our frustration. We know also the harm that waiting extended too long can do us. We lose our senses of purpose if the waiting's prolonged.
The young men say if Usul does not call out Stilgar, then he must be afraid," Tharthar said.
She lowered her gaze.
"So that's the way of it," Jessica muttered. And she thought, "Well, I saw it coming. As did Stilgar."
Again, Tharthar cleared her throat.
"Even my brother, Shoab, says it," she said. "They will leave Usul no choice."
"Then it has come," Jessica thought. "And Paul will have to handle it himself. The Reverend Mother dare not become involved in the succession."
Aaliyah freed her hand from her mother's, said,
"I will go with Tharthar and listen to the young men. Perhaps there is a way."
Jessica met Tharthar's gaze, but spoke to Aaliyah.
"Go then, and report to me as soon as you can."
"We do not want this thing to happen, Reverend Mother," Tharthar said.
"We do not want it," Jessica agreed. "The tribe needs all its strength." She glanced at Hera.
"Will you go with them?"
Hera answered the unspoken part of the question.
"Tharthar will allow no harm to befall Aaliyah. She knows we will soon be wives together, she and I, to share the same man.
We have talked, Tharthar and I."
Hera looked up at Tharthar, back to Jessica.
"We have an understanding."
Tharthar held out a hand for Aaliyah, said,
"We must hurry. The young men are leaving."
They pressed through the hangings, the child's hand in the small woman's hand, but the child seemed to be leading.
"If Paul Muad'Dib slays Stilgar, this will not serve the tribe," Hera said. "Always before it has been the way of succession, but times have changed."
"Times have changed for you as well," Jessica said.
"You cannot think I doubt the outcome of such a battle," Hera said. "Usul could not but win."
"That was my meaning," Jessica said.
"And you think my personal feelings enter into my judgment," Hera said.
She shook her head, her water rings tinkling at her neck.
"How wrong you are. Perhaps you think as well that I regret not being the chosen of Usul, that I am jealous of Chaney."
"You make your own choice as you are able," Jessica said.
"I pity Chaney," Hera said.
Jessica stiffened.
"What do you mean?"
"I know what you think of Chaney," Hera said.
"You think she is not the wife for your son."
Jessica settled back, relaxed on her cushions. She shrugged.
Perhaps.
You could be right, Hera said. If you are, you may find a surprising ally.
Chaney herself.
She wants whatever is best for him. Jessica swallowed past a sudden tightening in her throat.
Chaney's very dear to me, she said.
She could be no... Your rugs are very dirty in here, Hera said. She swept her gaze around the floor, avoiding Jessica's eyes.
So many people tramping through here all the time.
You really should have them cleaned more often,